Welcome, everyone, to the third episode of The Podcast Dude. My name is Aaron Dowd, and today I'm going to be sharing 10 things to do before you start recording to get a great audio recording. This show is going to be an introduction to recording audio. So I was planning the show out last week, I was thinking about all the different steps that I take before I actually hit record in, you know, the program I'm using, which in this case happens to be Logic Pro X. But there's actually a lot of preparation that goes into recording a show and making sure everything goes smoothly. So I wanted to talk about all that stuff today. And so after writing an outline, writing a bunch of things down, I came up with 10 things to do to get a great sounding recording. So let's go ahead and jump in. And the first one is find or create a quiet recording environment if possible. So turn off the fans, turn off the AC, turn off any heaters, try to record in a room with minimal echo. I said in the last episode that you can use things like couch cushions to dampen the sound. So that's an option. Just try to get in a room that doesn't have a lot of natural reverb or echo. And number two, make sure your mic is plugged in and everything switched on. And this, you know, duh, right? But the old saying in IT support is, have you tried turning it off and back on again? So you just want to make sure that everything's plugged in, everything's good to go. And also, if you're using an XLR mic, and this doesn't apply to USB microphones, but if you have a condenser mic that is just a normal XLR microphone and it's plugged into an interface, you want to make sure that you have phantom power turned on. And for a lot of interfaces, this might be a button that says 48V. And that's just phantom power that powers condenser microphones. So if you're using a condenser microphone, then you want to make sure it's turned on. If you're using a dynamic microphone, you want to make sure that it's turned off. So that's just something to be aware of, depending on the mic. Like I said, if you have a USB microphone, this isn't going to apply. Those are powered through USB. You don't need to worry about that. Number three, if you're using a laptop, make sure you're plugged in so you got power or enough battery if you're out in the, you know, in the wild recording. But also make sure that you have enough disk space to record. And funny story, this morning I went to set up for this podcast and I was like, I've been doing a lot of editing this weekend. I've been putting together some video for some people for my band. I've been doing a lot of podcasts. I wonder how much disk space I have. And I went and I opened up the program I use, which is Daisy Disk, to see how much disk space I have. And I had 4 gigabytes of space left on my 250 gig SSD. So high quality audio, which is your goal when you record. A lot of programs just record uncompressed raw files. And those can be kind of big depending on the length of your show. So if you go an hour, I think it's somewhere around a gig. But either way, you just want to make sure that you have enough space to record all the audio that you need. And the last thing you want to do is be in the middle of a great conversation and have your program tell you that you ran out of disk space. That's, you know, super embarrassing. So just be prepared. Make sure your computer's plugged in, you got enough battery power, and that you have enough disk space. The fourth thing, make sure that you're using headphones and a pop filter. And in the last episode, I talked about the importance of using a pop filter. That'll just make you sound really good. So you should already have bought one. If not, go ahead and buy one. But headphones too, because if you're talking to a co-host or if you're interviewing someone and you're not using headphones, if you're not wearing headphones, you're using earbuds, and you have their voice coming out of your computer speakers or your laptop speakers, that's going to be picked up by your microphone and it's going to cause an echo. And that sounds horrible. And there's not really a good way to eliminate that in the recordings with post-production. So just make sure you wear headphones when you're recording. It's essential. Number five, set your phone and computer notifications to silent. I hear this all the time. I'm listening to a podcast and one of the hosts on the podcast will get an alert on their phone. Or I was listening to the talk show the other day and they were talking about the Apple Watch and the co-host kept getting notifications on her watch and it was just ding, ding. And it, you know, they made a joke out of it, but it's really distracting. It's much better to just silence everything and make sure you don't have any things going on in the background that will distract people from your content, from your message. Corey Miller said in the chat room, backtrack just a little bit. I live next to a road and there's a window in my office, so it's next to impossible to get 100% silence. I don't want to cover up the window, so is there a way to get good sound in my room just depending on where the mic is pointed or something like that? I got a couple answers for that. One, it's next to impossible to get 100% silence anywhere. Only the best recording studios that are... I was actually listening to a podcast where a guy who builds recording studios was talking about how important location of the studio is, because to get 100% silence, you have to think about, all right, are there any major roads nearby? Is there likely going to be a lot of foot traffic or a lot of car traffic? Are there trains nearby? Are you on top of like a subway line? Or, you know, there's just so many things. So for most people, you're not going to be able to get 100% silence in your recordings, but that's okay. If you're using a dynamic microphone, if you got the gain set up right, for maximal noise rejection, you actually want to have the microphone pointed directly away from the sound source. So Corey, I would say if you have a window and sound is coming through that window, or if you have a door and there's sounds maybe from the rest of your house, like in my case, I have a door to the room I'm recording in. What you can actually do besides pointing the microphone directly away from that sound source, which gives you the most noise rejection, is I actually take a blanket and put it down underneath where the bottom of the door is. So that kind of blocks some of the sound from coming under the door and up, because sound is kind of like water. It just flows wherever there's gaps. So you could also hang a blanket above the window, like on the curtains. I don't think you should keep spare mattresses in your rooms or whatever, your office, but any kind of thick material to cover that, even if it's just when you're recording, that'll help with that sound. So Corey, I hope that helps. You better have that fixed by the time you come on my show to talk about branding. Just fair warning. All right, next thing. Number six, open your recording software, choose your mic. And this would be when you have a track like in QuickTime or GarageBand or Audacity, you need to set the input source. So in QuickTime, if you open QuickTime up, which should be included with your Mac if you're using that, I don't know if you can get them on Windows. But if you open QuickTime up and you select File, New Audio Recording, this little box will pop up and it'll show you a little meter in the middle. And underneath that, you got this red record button. And there's a little drop-down arrow right next to that. And if you click on that, that'll give you the option to select your microphone source. So you need to select, if you're using a USB mic, you need to select your microphone. If you're using an interface, you need to select that interface. Now, GarageBand, it's a little bit more complicated. And GarageBand works pretty well for recording audio. And it's a free or a cheap option, especially if you're on only if you're on a Mac, really. But the most recent version of GarageBand, I found the user interface to be kind of unintuitive. But what you need to do is when you open up a new project, you go up to View in the menu bar, or you can hit B to open up Smart Controls. And you'll see a few options. You'll see over on the left, you should see a little I or info button, and that's an inspector. You'll see Master just to the right of that. Click on that inspector button. You'll see recording settings and plugins drop down. And recording settings is where you can set your input gain levels. You can select your mic input where it says input. You can select monitoring if you want to listen to yourself while you're recording, which is a good idea so you can hear what you sound like. And then you've got a bunch of plugins that you will probably want to turn off. I don't know if the very newest version of GarageBand has echo and reverb on by default, but I know some of the previous versions did. And you don't want to record a track with a bunch of added echo and reverb. It will make you sound like you're recording in a large church, which is the opposite of the intimate sound that you want. So just be aware of that. I would recommend turning off the plugins for your raw recording. And if you want to, you can go back and play with those later. I'll be touching on plugins in a future episode. If you're using, let's see, some of the other options. So I'm going to go over all the options here. I mentioned QuickTime. That's a great way to just quickly record an audio track. You got Audacity, which works for both Mac and Windows, GarageBand, Reaper, which is $60. It's a step up. It's a real digital audio workstation. So if you want to get into recording and editing audio, I think it'll be a little bit easier to work with. Once you get familiar with it, it'll be easier to work with than something like GarageBand or Audacity. Brooks asks, what do I think about Audition? I know it's powerful. It has many of the same options as Reaper or Logic Pro X, which is what I use, or Pro Tools. And I think if you have a Creative Cloud subscription, you can get free access to it, possibly, depending on which tier you're on, because I think there's different options. But Audition is powerful. I had a guy email me the other day that told me he was spending 16 hours or so editing a 90-minute show. And I was like, man, keyboard shortcuts or templates or something. Like, you got to get that time down. That's way too long. So I've gotten really comfortable and familiar with recording and editing in Logic Pro X, and I really like it. It's $199. Actually, let me bring in a question real quick, because Kyle had asked me last week. He wanted to know the difference between free or low-cost software versus investing in something like Logic. What's the benefit? You know, what's the best time to invest in pro software like Logic? My response to that is that if you're going to be doing a lot of editing on your podcast, or if you want to spend a lot of time learning about, well, maybe not even a lot of time, but if you just want to spend time learning the basics of post-processing, which is EQ, and that's balancing the different frequencies to make sure there's not too much bass or not too much mid-range or not too much treble, or if you want to learn about compression, which is controlling the dynamic range between the very loudest parts of your track and the very quietest. If you want to learn about post-production, if you're going to be spending a lot of time working on your podcast, it's a good idea to invest in some kind of pro software. But that's really up to you. You know, there's a lot of people out there that would be willing to edit your podcast for, I would say, affordable. You know, you get what you pay for. But if you think you need it, if you feel you're ready for it, drop the money. I think it's a good investment, especially for entrepreneurs and people who are going to be producing video and want to do really high quality audio. Like I said, I spent a lot of time learning Logic and learning all the different post-production techniques. And I'm going to be going over that stuff in a future episode, because Alice asked me earlier in the chat. Well, she didn't really ask me. She kind of told me that I use a lot of terms that the normal person who isn't an experienced audio engineer won't really understand. And I realized that I do need to do a good job of explaining those terms and walking through it and explaining it simply. So I want to touch on that. Hopefully I can get to that maybe in the next episode, maybe in the next couple episodes. Okay, so the very next step is checking and setting your input gain levels. And I got a question from Alice about this and a few other people. You know, first off, what is gain? And what do you mean by input gain levels and setting them? And what should I set them to? So I want to cover that real quick. And I'd gotten a question about the basics of signal flow. So what is signal flow? The very first step of recording is how much volume your microphone is picking up in recording. So you adjust that with a gain knob. And for a lot of USB microphones, there will be a gain knob on the microphone. And my setup right now, I have a Shure SM7B, and it's running into a Focusrite Scarlett 2i2 interface. So the cable goes from the microphone into a microphone input on the interface. And there's actually a gain knob right next to that. And I can adjust that. And you know what? Actually, I'm wrong. I'm running this microphone into a DBX preprocessor. But it's the same deal. The very first option I have is setting the gain. So how much gain you'll need depends on how loud you're going to be talking, how much volume you're projecting into the microphone, also how close or how far away you are from the microphone, which is a great time to mention another question. How close should I be to the microphone when recording? My recommendation is very close, because the closer you are to the microphone, the more bass will be picked up by the microphone. So that's called proximity effect. So what I like to do, what a lot of people do, to get the best sound that I found comes from putting your pop filter right up next to the microphone. And you absolutely, I cannot say this enough, absolutely should be using a pop filter every time you record. put the pop filter right up next to the microphone, and then get right up into that pop filter. And then adjust your gain levels so that the loudest peaks when you're speaking confidently, your gain should not be going over negative 12 dB or negative 6 dB. I shoot for between negative 16 and negative 12 when I'm recording. And so that's the very first step, setting those input gain levels. After that, you can adjust the gain of the recording by either boosting or cutting gain in different plugins or in the little mixer. If you're using GarageBand or Logic, you see this row of faders, and then you can adjust the gain. So, but the most important thing is getting input gain levels right, and then you can adjust after that. You can add some signal, so add some volume, or remove some. And it's important to know that the volume that you're listening back, so your computer's volume is not the same thing as the gain that you're getting on the recording. When I'm mixing, when I'm editing, I'm listening to the track or the podcast at about 60% of maximum volume. So just because you turn your computer speakers up or turn them down, that's not going to affect the gain of the track. That's just affecting playback volume. In GarageBand and in Logic, in a lot of programs, you'll have these gain meters that'll show you how much gain is coming in through the microphone, so you can adjust that. Zero is the ceiling. That's what you want to avoid. If your gain meter shows that you're coming up and you're hitting that, if the signal is too hot coming in, you'll get distortion, you'll get clipping, and that's not good. There are ways to fix that, but very expensive plugins, and it's better to not clip or distort with your input gain when you're recording. So, yeah. And Justin said sometimes when his wife is recording, she'll laugh and that'll cause louder peaks. So that plays into mic technique. You have to know that if you're projecting a lot more, if you're laughing very loudly, you need to back away from the mic or laugh to the side. So talking to the microphone, get pretty close, use your pop filter, start talking, record yourself speaking at a normal conversation level, what you would feel comfortable with talking, and then adjust your gain knob either on your interface, on your microphone. Sometimes if you're recording with a USB microphone that doesn't have a gain knob, you may have to adjust the input levels in, like, say, GarageBand or Audacity. And in GarageBand, if you open up the inspector, as I was talking about earlier, the very first drop-down menu is recording settings, and then you'll see record level. So you'll want to adjust that. And if you don't have numbers on your input gain meter or your gain meter, that's okay. Just most of those will have colors to indicate how loud your track is. Your very loudest point should not ever hit the red. They should be right where green meets yellow, which is, I think, generally about 75% of maximum. So another thing I tell people, that if you're having doubts about how loud your track is, how much gain you're getting, go for a little bit less gain rather than a little bit too much, because you can always go back and add some gain in later if you get a clean recording. If you're recording too hot and you're clipping, there's not a great way to fix that. So when in doubt, just go a little bit quieter with your gain knob. Number 8, make a test recording. Make 2 test recordings. Test as many times as you need to make sure you sound good. The last thing you want to do is show up and start recording and not be confident about how you sound. So get everything set up. You know, give yourself maybe an hour before you start recording, or maybe even the day before, or just practice on your own time. Plug your microphone in, open up your program, select your microphone input, start recording, adjust the gain. And it actually helps if you listen to yourself as you're recording, and that's just called monitoring. So you're monitoring yourself to hear what you sound like. This will give you a good idea about it. If your gain levels are too hot, if you're too loud, or if you're not loud enough, you can adjust the gain, watch the meters. But make a recording and listen back to it and see how it sounds, because that'll give you a good idea if there's any buzz, if there's any hum, if there's background noise that you should be getting rid of, it's just a great idea to make a test recording before you start recording. And before you start recording the actual podcast, before you get on a podcast or before you get on an interview. All right. Number nine, have an outline prepared for your show. If you want to do a great podcast, if you want to grow your audience, if you want people to feel like you're prepared, then you need to prepare an outline for your show. And it doesn't have to be thousands and thousands of words. Bullet points are fine, but prepare an outline for your show, know what you're going to be talking about, and then decide how you are going to start and end your show before you begin. Because your show should have a clear beginning and a clear ending. And if you're, a lot of people will do after shows, you know, after the final music plays or at the very end of the podcast, maybe it's just them talking casually to their friends. I do this sometimes. It's also not a bad idea to give your listeners some kind of indication that the show is over. So maybe a little clip of music, or maybe you just say bye, see you next week, something like that. But decide beforehand how you're going to start and end your show. Number 10, last number. Record in 24-bit audio, if possible. Now, most recording software, they're going to be recording probably an uncompressed WAV or .AIFF file. So uncompressed is what you want to record in. If you don't have the option of what kind of recording you're going to do up front, you'll probably get that option when you're exporting the audio file. So typically, digital recordings used to be done in 16-bit audio, but 24-bit audio is good, 32 is fine. Most interfaces and microphones will probably record in 24. I think some of the USB mics record in 16-bit audio, which is less than ideal. And Corey asked, what's the difference between recording in 44.1K, 48K, or 96K? And I was reading an article about this last night because I was curious and I wanted to know if I should bring this into the show. And what I got out of it is that 44.1K is fine. 48K is a little bit better. And supposedly that's the standard for video these days. But either 44.1 or 48K is fine. 96K is going to be higher resolution. I know people argue about if people can actually hear the difference between 96 and 44, but I believe you'll probably end up with a much larger file size for not that much improvement in audio quality. So yeah, I would say just go for 24-bit, 44.1K is fine. You don't need to worry about it. There's so many other things to worry about. So for podcast, that's fine. And after you're done recording, you should export your files as uncompressed.wav files or .AIFF files. If whatever software you end up recording in does not give you the option for that, just go with whatever the highest quality is. So if, say, you're recording with something like Ecamm Call Recorder for Skype, and I'm going to talk about Skype more in a second, but whenever you're exporting an audio file and you're going to be doing some editing on it, so you're going to drop it into a program like GarageBand or Logic or Audition, and you're going to be doing some editing and then rebouncing the file, if you start off with an MP3 file, Sean just mentioned to me that the listeners may not know that I'm talking about bouncing the final audio file. So let me back up just a little bit. Okay, so you're going to record an audio file, right? You're going to set up your microphone. You're going to talk into the microphone. You're going to record that. That file, if you want to, my workflow is generally, and maybe I could do this differently, but my workflow is generally, I will start a new project or new template inside of Logic. I will set my microphone input, hit record. I'll talk for, 30, 45 minutes, an hour, whatever. And then I will save that audio or export that audio. I won't do anything to it. I'm just going to export that raw audio into a .wav or .AIFF file that I will then drop into a new project that has all the files and the music that is eventually going to be my final show. So then I'll do a bunch of editing on those files, and then I will export that as an MP3 file. So your goal is to start with uncompressed audio, high quality audio. If you're going to be doing any editing, if you're going to be handing that off to someone for editing, then they will take that, they'll take the WAV file or the .aff file, do the editing, and then bounce as an MP3. Okay, so, and this is important. I don't want to talk about recording Skype calls and recording co-hosts and all that stuff now. If you're going to be doing a podcast with a co-host or interviewing a guest over Skype, you'll want to do what's called a double ender. So this means that both you and the other person record an audio track on both of your computers with QuickTime or with GarageBand or with Audacity, you know, whatever program you're comfortable with or whatever program they're comfortable with. But you'll also want to record the audio from the Skype call so you can have that as a backup. I don't recommend using Skype recordings for a podcast because Skype usually has audio issues. But if you need to record that call, sometimes it can be a lifesaver. You know, I've worked with shows where they've had two or three people recording audio on their computers, and then they've also recorded the Skype call, but one of the hosts or one of the co-hosts or one of the interviewees, maybe they didn't set the input, the microphone, right in their program. So they got a really, really low quality recording from their laptop microphone, or maybe they forgot to hit record and they didn't capture any of the conversation. So then you have the option to fall back to the audio recorded from the Skype call. You know, mistakes happen. This stuff is fairly complicated. People make mistakes sometimes, especially if you're doing a show where you're going to interview a new person every week. If you know how to do some editing, or if you have a podcast editor, if you know how to do any post-production, you can improve the sound of a raw recording more so than you can improve the sound of a Skype recording, especially if there are drops, if the internet connection is bad. Which also reminds me, we want to talk about this real quick. If you're going to be talking or streaming live, if you're going to be talking to a co-host over Skype or streaming live in any way, you have to turn off anything that could take up the internet connection that you're using. So Dropbox, Google Drive, backup services, any of those cloud services that are maintaining or sending data over the internet, over Wi-Fi, Ethernet, or otherwise, turn that stuff off. Quit Dropbox, quit Google Drive, quit your Backblaze, what have you. And this just makes sure that you have the broadest bandwidth for Skype, which will mean that you'll get better sound quality out of it. So have everyone record a track on their computer. Have them send that to you or whoever your podcast editor is to put it together. And also record the Skype. And you can use, there's a couple different programs for doing that. I've used Ecamm Call Recorder, and that's Mac only. It costs $30, but it's easy to use. It pops up whenever you open Skype and says, hey, do you want to record? And you hit yes, and it starts recording. When it's done, you can export the file. Boom, easy. There's also Audio Hijack. And Audio Hijack can record audio from any application that you're using. It can record that output. It's $50, Mac only as well. It can actually do a lot of things. So I'll need to touch on that in a future episode. All right, so that wraps it up for my list of things to do to get a great sounding recording, do a good podcast. Thank you guys for listening. I do want to mention real quick, the Sean West community is phenomenal. And I really appreciate everyone in it for showing up and asking me questions and engaging with me. If you're thinking about starting a podcast, if you're wanting to maybe start your own business or become an entrepreneur or become a freelancer like me, I know I talked about this before, but it's still crazy to me that I make my living working for clients, many of which I have never actually met. I've just found them on the internet or they found me. That's really amazing, but I've learned so many things from being in the community and from talking to Sean McCabe and Corey Miller and Justin Michael and so many other awesome people that I just can't recommend it enough. And the community is why the show doesn't have sponsors. So if you appreciate everything that Sean does, if you appreciate what I do, consider joining. I think you'll find it extremely informative and educational, and you'll make a lot of great new friends and new relationships. I love it. I love being here. I hope to see some of you guys in there. You know, I hang out in there all the time and answer questions about audio. So it's a great way to get direct access to me. All right. Thank you guys for listening. If you like the show, if you want to help the show, head over to I got to get out of the habit of just saying podcast dude. It is thepodcastdude.com/iTunes. And leave me a review. That really helps me out, helps other people find the show. To everybody, have a great week, and I will talk to you soon. I'm going to take some questions real quick. Hannah had asked, I think this was last week, but Hannah had asked, I'm planning on starting with video before moving to audio content. Is there a mic that will work well for both? Or should I just focus on a decent video mic for now? My thought on this is that a good shotgun mic will probably work well for both video and audio. I don't think it's going to give you the intimacy or the warmth that you could get from being right up close to a dynamic mic like the Shure SM7B, but it'll let you get good audio when you're, you know, because your camera has to be, you know, 4, 5, 6, 10 feet away from you while you're shooting video. And a shotgun microphone is just a very, very focused microphone. It really only records what's right in front of it, what it's pointed at. It has a lot of off microphone rejection. So yeah, I think look at some shotgun microphones, whatever your budget is for that. If video is more important to you than, say, podcasting or just only audio content, then do that. A lav mic might work well as well. Like I said, I have not heard a lav mic that sounds as good as a really great dynamic or condenser mic, but that's kind of a compromise, I think. Brent asks, recording audio and video separately to sync later is frustrating. What can I do to ease or streamline that process? And I know that a lot of people will do like the three clap method when shooting video. So if you got your video camera and you got a microphone on that, and then you got another microphone somewhere else, or if say you've got multiple cameras shooting, then you clap three times and you can line up the sound, the audio file, based on those peaks. And that should give you a nice clean place to start to line up those things. I know Final Cut Pro has a feature that if you drop a couple of different video files in that are, you know, of the same scene, it'll actually automatically sync them based on the audio file. So they'll look at it and line it up. So that's really cool. I'm not super familiar with a lot of the other video editing software. That's, yeah, but either, I think the clapping system would work well for that. In some behind the scenes news, yesterday I pointed my website DNS to seanwest.com. So if you visit thepodcastdude.com now, it will take you to seanwest.com/thepodcastdude, I believe, which is the page for my show. And you can sign up for my email newsletter. But I'm honestly very excited to be part of the Sean West website. You know, being friends with Sean is great. All that aside, it's just like, you know, my girlfriend actually asked me the other day, why do you want to merge your site with his? And I said, okay, mainly because his audience is way larger than mine. So that's great. a bigger audience. Sure. That's great. I know Sean gets tons and tons of visitors, but I really agree with everything that's happening here, with everything with the community and all of Sean's values and attention to detail and producing great stuff and sharing and learning. I have not been this excited about being on the internet ever, I think, really. Like, this feels like something big. This feels like something massive. And, you know, and it's like getting in at the start of something epic. And I love that. And I love the synergy that is happening from everyone in the community and everyone that Sean's hired to be part of his team. These are just like the best kind of people all coming together, you know, like the Avengers. And it's just, it's a really cool thing to be a part of. And I'm really excited about it. And I love that people that come for my show are going to see the website and they're going to go click around and they're going to find all the stuff that Ben's doing, or, you know, the podcast In the Boat with Ben, Corey's podcast, Sean's, don't get me started on the Sean West podcast, but like Lambo Goal, there's all this awesome stuff happening. And I love that I get to be a part of it. And so that was the main reason I told her. I was like, I like being a part of this network. I like the idea of being a part of that website, being associated with that website. It reflects good on me, but it also makes me try harder. It makes me care more. You know, I don't know if I told Sean this last week, but the show notes that I've been writing for the past two episodes and what I'm going to have to write for this one are so much more epic than any blog post I ever wrote, because one, I really spent a ton of time preparing and writing for these episodes. And two, you know, then I had to show up and record, which is also great. But then I'm going back through and I'm listening and I'm writing all this stuff out. And then I'm adding headlines and pulling out takeaways and quotes and all this different stuff that goes into writing show notes. So they're turning into like the, and maybe I could have cut this down a little bit, but I think I did 7,000 words for the first episode and something like, right now I have like 4,000 words for the previous episode, which is the gear guide. Like there was so much stuff in that gear guide. It's so epic. And I haven't even started, I don't know if I'm going to, I probably should, but I haven't even done the Q&A section of last episode. So that could be another 1,000, 2,000 words, but this is pushing me to really make great stuff, because I'm in the presence of all these people that are doing all these awesome things. And that just motivates me and drives me, and the public accountability and all that stuff. So all that to say, I'm really excited about being on the network and about having a place on the website. And I'm looking forward to Justin getting the blogging feature set up so I can start porting good content from my old site over to the new one. And then also, you know, maybe making some new posts. I can keep doing screencasts. I'd like to do some shorter ones, just, you know, one-off hits about various things that I've learned how to do and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, I'm stoked. I'm excited. Gold after show. Should that be the after show? Put it in the real show? I can do that. I can do whatever I want. As long as Sean's cool with it. Okay, guys. I mentioned earlier that you should tell people when your show is ending. So this is the end of the after show. I'll talk to you guys next week.